hello and welcome. You are listening to Gore and Guilty Podcast. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Greg.
And this week we have a Greg episode. I believe you are talking about one of the big ones, Harold Shipman.
Indeed, indeed. One of the most famous cases in the UK. This is a real classic Gore and Guilty episode, I suppose. We are just going to talk through one of Britain's most notorious serial killers and actually the most prolific, I believe. So yes.
Yes. I believe he was called the Angel of Death, right?
Yeah, Dr. Death and the Angel of Death were his other names. Mm. He's a pretty sinister guy, but this is a real interesting serial killer because, like some others, he ends up in a position where you wouldn't expect a serial killer with sinister intent to be hiding.
Yeah, super interesting.
Before we do that, what's new? How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We've got another lovely bank holiday weekend. I feel like we've had quite a few of those lately. But yeah, we went out on Friday night to celebrate my boyfriend's mum handing in her PhD, which was really good. So that was really fun. And I do have a little serious note to kind of sort of chat about quickly on the podcast. Not this weekend, but last weekend, one of our friends who we were out with, we went to this club. It was a paid event, so you had to like pay tickets to go into it. There was about a crowd of 80 people, so it was pretty small. And my friend was spiked, which is super serious. It was in Swansea, and I kind of wanted to raise awareness on it because at the time, myself and all the friends that we were with, we didn't realise that she had been drugged. And that, I think, is what really has resonated. She's okay and she's fine now. She's off living her best life, so she's okay. But she only had 4 drinks that night. We didn't realise how much she had drank. And on her final drink, it was spiked within her drink rather than at the moment in Swansea. Apparently, there's injections that are going around, injection needles that people are spiking people through that, which is so scary. God. Hers was in her drink, and her boyfriend took a couple sips of her drink as well. He threw up pretty much immediately, but wasn't able to speak and communicate what happened. And with my friend, she, within 10 minutes of drinking her drink, she drank the rest of it. And she, you know, she's a small girl, so, well, lady, but she completely collapsed. She couldn't speak. She wasn't there throwing up, horrendously ill and things like that. But we just assumed that she drank too much and she was just really drunk. But she wasn't. And that's, so if ever you see your friend that maybe doesn't throw up, she never threw up, like drinking or anything like that. So that was like an out of character.
Very
thing.
Unusual. Yeah.
So, yeah. If your friend's on feet, like, unusually drunk or really drunk all of a sudden and you don't understand why, like, that's what we all kept saying, we don't understand how she's got to this state, she's probably, or they are probably, drugged or been spiked. So I recommend, you know, tell someone at the place there and then and take them to the hospital as soon as possible to take those blood samples so that you can get it on the record and make sure that they're okay. But luckily she's okay. She woke up a little bit hazy the next day and kind of a little bit out of it, but she's fully recovered now. But super important to share, I think.
Was she like rattled the next day?
I think it's going to hit her, I think, a few like days or weeks later, because she can't remember what had happened.
Hmm.
The last point that she remembers is she bought a drink at the bar. She left it on the bar and she turned her back to her drink and she remembers this. She turns and speaks to a friend for a moment, turns back to her drink, and she thinks, I hope no one spiked it. And she drank that drink and it was spiked. So that is her last memory. From then on, she just remembers being home and she doesn't remember the in-between. She says she woke up the next day going, oh my gosh, what happened? And did I really get that drunk? And, you know, she starts to doubt herself, which I think is quite common, I think, with being spiked. Maybe I was just really drunk, but she definitely wasn't. I was definitely spiked.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary out there. so many dickheads about.
Yeah, so always keep an eye on your drink. And if your friend's looking drunker than she should be, yeah, just check in and make sure they're okay.
Stay safe out there, people. Stay safe out there.
But yeah, so on that little dampener, little serious note, how have you been, Greg? What have you been up to?
I've been drinking a lot of alcohol with friends this weekend, so that's been good.
I'm
feeling the effects right now. I'm in the midst of an existential crisis. No, just kidding, not really, but I am definitely hungover right now. But I'm powering through, so this is all good. Excited to do this episode. Yeah. Do we do a quick question, do you think?
I reckon so. Let's do that.
Let's do it. Do you want to pick a number between 1 and 250?
I'm going to say 102.
Who do you most like spending time with and why?
I think this is quite an easy one. Probably boyfriend, friends, family are all up there because I like them. You, I like you. Like, I don't know.
That's very kind, thank you.
It is, yeah, no worries. What about you, Greg?
No one. No, just kidding.
Myself.
all the same. I don't have a girlfriend or anything, so I guess it's me. Just more varied people. I've been hanging out with more people in Cardiff now, so that's been good. That's been fun for me.
Yeah, socialising, being a social butterfly.
Absolutely. Hard to pinpoint someone. Actually, maybe my friend Joe, he was on top form last night. He was, wasn't spiked, but he was on a mad one for sure.
I did see some videos of him dancing from last week. So.
had to be deleted from my Instagram stories before I got him in trouble.
Oh, well, whoops.
It's fine. They weren't incriminating, it was just slightly embarrassing, so I thought I'd help him out.
Oh, they were great.
They were great, to be fair. Right. Awful dance moves aside, should we do some Harold Shipman?
Let's do it.
This week, we're doing an overview of the man believed to be Britain's most prolific serial killer, Harold Shipman. And as you pointed out, Georgia, he is also known as the Angel of Death, or as Dr. Death. Sounds like a very ominous like film title.
I know.
Something from a James Bond series.
Yeah, it's the Angel of Death.
But, yeah, Angel of Death. But this isn't a work of fiction, and the guy was actually extremely prolific. I've taken many of the notes for today's episode from a comprehensive article written by All That's Interesting, written by Danielle Tinning. So if anyone wants a link to that article, then shoot us a message and we'll happily share it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Naturally, as a true crime podcaster, I find serial killers a point of interest. I'm assuming that's the same for you too, Georgia.
Yeah, very much so. Super interesting.
What I find extra fascinating, though, if you will, are killers and criminals who seem to find their position in society where you wouldn't expect to find a person with sinister intent. For example, Wayne Cousins, the police officer that kidnapped and killed Sarah Everard, or even the celebrities and household names that get exposed for awful crimes such as paedophilia.
I'll tell you another one as well. I've just finished watching Netflix, John Wayne Gacy's tapes, and it's all about like hidden tapes that haven't been released yet about John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, wow.
And he was someone that went super powerful, had a lot of friends in high places, and yet he was horrific. So super interesting.
That's another good example, right? Like, he used to work with kids and all that sort of stuff.
And charity work. So he was super sociable. Everybody knew him in lots of high places. And when things started to unravel, no one would have thought, oh, it's John Wayne Gacy. Surely it can't be him because he does so much good. And yet he was one of the worst. So, yeah, it's those kinds of people.
Good example. I'm finishing off the documentary of Jimmy Savile on Netflix.
That's another one.
Yeah, shocking. Shocking.
Super shocking.
Because he was so altruistic and doing loads of things for charitable causes that you just never would expect someone like that to be so evil.
Yeah, and especially with that one as well, watching that documentary, the amount of times where he kind of says it out loud, he says what he's doing out loud, and no one really picks up on the subtleties or the fact that he's actually being serious there, where he says something really inappropriate. And yeah, the clues were there, it just was never picked up because he was this eccentric character doing good, which, yeah, terrible.
Absolutely. Harold Shipman was a general practitioner, a doctor, and therefore also in a position where you wouldn't expect to find someone actively looking to harm others. Certainly not where you'd expect to find Britain's most prolific killer. So how on earth did he get there? And I guess this is more the focus for today's episode. We'll talk a little bit more about Harold Shipman's modus operandi and how he accessed his victims. But today's episode is more about Harold Shipman himself, because there was so much consistency to his crimes that there's not really many nuances between each individual one. So I'm not planning on going into too much detail on the crimes itself.
Okay, interesting.
Shipman was born in Nottingham, England, 1946. He was a promising student throughout his time at school and also was an excellent sports person. I saw a picture of a young Harold Shipman, and this guy did look like a classic middle-class rugby gent. Mm. Strikes me as probably very posh.
Okay.
But that being said, Shipman was actually born on a council estate, so not posh at all. His father was a truck driver, and both his parents were devout Methodists.
Right, interesting.
Like me, Shipman attended a grammar school. For people in the UK who aren't aware, these are state-funded schools that you need to pass an exam to get into, so admission is based on ability of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
This would mean that Shipman was likely very smart, and as we know, he went on to become a doctor, so that's probably true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shipman was apparently very close to his mother, who he witnessed pass away when he was only 17. As his mother lay dying in the hospital, Shipman would watch as the doctors administered morphine and painkillers to her.
Mm.
This process is strikingly similar to the modus operandi that Shipman would later develop.
Oh, that's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because that is exactly how he would kill his victims, was they would come and visit him in the surgery.
Yeah.
And he would administer them a really high dosage of morphine and opioids.
Until it's an overdose.
Yeah, basically overdose. And he either watched them die there, like he watched his mother.
Ooh.
Or he'd just send them home, safe in knowledge that they weren't going to survive.
Oh, that's super strange, yeah. Whether he's trying to reenact what he went through when he watched his mother die, I don't know. Like, seems like there must be a connection between that and what he went later on to do.
Yeah, because I was thinking about this, like, when I think about serial killers, I believe there's a strong component of, like, nature.
Mm.
And I think it takes a special something for someone to commit that sort of crime.
Yeah.
But I imagine that when he was there watching his mother, that must have maybe given him the experience to know like exactly what he wanted. Because I'm assuming if he was 17, he wasn't even still sure he was going to be a doctor.
Yeah, definitely. I think you could be right. I think that, you know, not all psychopaths or sociopaths go on to commit murder or become serial killers, or people that have that kind of chemical disposition that might provide them with the urges of wanting to do that. That doesn't necessarily mean it all. Like, that might not be enough. There must be like some sort of tick or something that's triggered them to go on to become a killer.
Yeah, completely. There's definitely a lot of debate to be had around nature or nurture when it comes to serial killers, but I think it really does take a special set of genetic makeup combined with experiences, and I'm sure that experience that Shipman had while watching his mother pass away slowly influenced not only his crimes, but possibly his future life decisions.
Yeah, maybe.
Shipman went on to marry Primrose May Oxterby while studying medicine. What great name, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say that's really pretty.
Yeah. The couple also went on to have 4 children. So they really were living a life that seemed totally ordinary from the outside. Shipman had graduated in 1970 and became a junior doctor. He quickly rose up the ranks and became a general practitioner based in West Yorkshire. In 1976, only 6 years after he graduated, Shipman first found himself in trouble. Shipman, it would seem, had become addicted to opioids and he was busted forging prescriptions for Demerol, which is an opioid used to treat severe pain.
No way. Oh yeah. My goodness, I did not expect that.
Yeah, so he's basically on this shit himself and just been writing away prescriptions so that he can access these strong medications.
Wow. Okay.
What do you reckon they'd do when they caught him doing that? What do you think they should have done?
Well, probably take his licensing and everything away from him. he's abused the system. He's broken their trust. He's in a position of power, so...
You would think so.
What did they do, Greg?
You would think so, but instead he was fined. He was fired from his job, and Shipman attended rehab, but he didn't lose his license. And within a year, he was back on his feet and working for Donnybrook Medical Centre as a doctor.
Would they have looked back at his record to see his history before they accepted that job, or do you think it would have flown over the radar and he just wiggled his way in?
I think back then he probably could have hidden it. Hard to say, really, if he was honest and disclosed the truth. I'm sure they probably could have, but I guess maybe like all the time there's a lack of doctors and maybe they just went for it anyway.
Turn the blind eye.
I guess he'd been to rehab, right? So maybe they thought he deserved a second chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shipman would remain at the Donnybrook Medical Practice for 15 years before going on to set up his own one-man GP practice in 1993. To those who knew him as a doctor, Shipman was known for his attentive bedside manner. Yet those who visited didn't know he was secretly killing the most vulnerable patients that were unfortunate enough to visit him. Shipman's first known victim was a woman named Eva Lyons. Her 71st birthday was the next day when Shipman cruelly flooded her body with enough morphine to kill her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, very uncomfortable with this method of killing. I mean, I obviously don't like hearing or reading about any method of killing, but... just the idea of someone pumping a load of drugs into your system and you think that you're being helped and actually it's just going to slowly kill you over the next few hours.
Yeah, it's super... yes, it's like a silent killer. I suppose it's probably quite fitting that we mentioned about the spiking earlier about someone giving you drugs that you do not want in your body. Like,
very true.
There's
very
no
true.
Consent. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of the Stephen Port case as well, and that one made me uncomfortable. Just something about unwittingly being spiked, being drugged. Ugh, don't like it. But yes, what a coincidence as well. We didn't coordinate that, people.
Yeah.
Shipman killing Eva Leon was approximately 1 year prior to Shipman being caught writing those dodgy prescriptions. Over the time of Shipman writing these prescriptions, he had supposedly acquired a large quantity of diamorphine, enough to kill hundreds of people.
Oh my gosh. So was he storing it for his later plan? So it wasn't just him using it for self-use, it was to store, I guess?
Yeah, it was quite hard to find how he did it logistically, but I think it was a combination of both. So he had like this massive backup, so maybe he could access extra without it raising any eyebrows over the years. But then I assume he was like keeping that topped up as well.
Oh my goodness.
According to researchers, Shipman stopped and started his killing several times throughout his life and career. However, the method and the targets were always the same, poisoning the vulnerable. Shipman's oldest victim was 93-year-old Ann Cooper, and his youngest victim was 41-year-old Peter Lewis. An interesting fact on that victim, funnily enough, Peter Lewis, he supposedly was in a boy band that had a number one hit in the Netherlands.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. All in all, it's believed that he killed 71 patients while working at the Donnybrook practice, and the remainder of his victims were killed while operating his one-man practice. Of his victims, 171 were female and 44 were men. So this guy really was incredibly prolific.
That's huge numbers.
Yeah, and also the vast majority are done while he was operating his one-man practice, and there's actually some interesting reforms I was reading about. I didn't put them in my notes, so I don't know why I've like raised this now, but it was quite interesting because apparently a lot of what he was able to get away with was because he was doing this like one-man practice, and there was no one there to raise the alarm or double-check these things that were happening.
So was it literally just him on his own sort of manning it all, and therefore, yeah, I guess, yeah, like you said, no one's there to check it, and... Yeah. Ooh, that is scary.
I'm sure he had workers that weren't doctors, but yeah, I believe that was it. It was just...
And there may have been audits and things, but he, because he's on his own, he can just sort it all out and make sure that everything looks the way it should do. But wasn't someone concerned about the high number of people that were dying?
And wow. Perfect time question that, because that is exactly what we're going to talk about now. Because Shipman was almost caught first early in 1998, and it was actually the undertakers in his community that had grown suspicious. So the funeral directors were basically, someone was saying like, well, this is weird, it's like all these people that are dying seem to be coming from this one surgery, and they raised the alarm basically.
Oh, good on them.
Indeed.
Because that's a lot of people. A lot of people.
A neighbouring medical practice also discovered that the death rate at Shipman's Medical Centre was almost 10 times as much as theirs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it means like for every one person dying at that neighbouring centre, there were 10 people dying at the hands of Shipman.
It's hard to even like comprehend the amount of people. Like, it's a lot of people, and I don't think, you know, your brains sometimes aren't capable of, like, realising, like, how many people that is killed by one person.
Yeah, they think it could be as many as 250, and that's like a really big room full of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people that were killed by him. You'd think the undertaker and the neighbouring medical practice raising the alarm would have led to Shipman's capture. However, it did not. The police investigation was underwhelming. And actually later on, when the inquest happened, it was called out that the police sent some very inexperienced officers to that case when they probably shouldn't have.
Oh, okay.
They didn't even check if Shipman had a criminal record.
Oh.
Which you'd think would be quite rudimentary.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess they just weren't expecting it to be quite as, like, big and just, yeah, prolific either, so.
Yeah, I also guess as well, they probably were like, well, what are we going here to investigate? Because if there's 10 times as many people dying, is there just some, like, maybe they thought they were looking into some kind of gross negligence? Like, they probably didn't think they were turning up to investigate a murder.
No, they wouldn't have, maybe. But then I guess as you're saying, like, they are going to assess why there are more dead people coming out of his facility than anyone else's. So they are looking for some sort of something going on here. Maybe they just weren't the right people to be put on this case.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Sounds like it would have been a pretty tough one to investigate, actually, so I'm surprised they sent such inexperienced officers there.
Super sad for the victims.
Very sad for the victims, very sad.
Mm.
Shipman had also covered his tracks by adding false illnesses to his victims' records. This meant the deaths looked far less suspicious, as from the investigator's perspective, they could all be explained away by these phony illnesses.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a doctor, so that sort of, like, you know, that authority kind of figure, you kind of end up trusting them and kind of just believing what they have to say. So,
yeah, I think question. So. I think so. Also, medical records are very private when the person's alive, right? So it does raise questions. You know, you can kind of start to see how this guy got away with it. If you're a police officer and you go in and you're like, hey, you know, we've had reports of all these extra people dying here. Can we go through some of these recent people that have passed away? All right, person A and Harold Shipman saying, oh, they had this illness and they're dead now, so they can't really check. And it's like, oh, person B, oh, had this illness.
Chucking some Latin scientific names in there as well, it would confuse a lot of people if they didn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're not from a medical background, I wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah, it would be super hard to call out a doctor on something like that.
Mm. Yeah.
Things did begin to unravel later that year, though, and Shipman was caught after murdering 81-year-old Kathleen Grundy. Shipman visited the former mayoress of Hyde at her home on June 24, 1998. But instead of a standard blood test, he instead injected her with a lethal dose of morphine, and she was found deceased later that day. Friends discovered the body, and Shipman was notified, who declared that the cause of death was simply old age. However, by forging the victim's will on her old typewriter, Shipman attracted suspicion from the woman's daughter, Angela Woodruff, who happened to be a solicitor. In the will, yeah, this is crazy, right? In the will, it explains the decision to leave the entire estate to Shipman. Although there was a particularly fatal error made, the murderer's fingerprints were actually found on the document.
No. What, so he's going around forging wills now?
Yeah, apparently so. And I couldn't find this about other victims. I don't know if it was just something about this one or he is short on cash all of a sudden. That feels like a not so good thing, right?
No, I feel like he's slipping up, or maybe he's getting too confident and thinking, I can get more from this, or I don't know, that's a strange move from his behalf.
Could be a confidence thing. He has just got away with an investigation.
Yeah. Like hundreds of people.
Feels very overly confident to get one of your patients or forge one of your patients' wills so it looks like they're leaving all their money to you, their doctor.
All of it. Yeah, all of it. And she was only, what, she was only going in for a blood test? Like a checkup?
Yeah, like a routine blood test.
And suddenly she's died, murdered, and then leaves the entire state. It's very convenient for him.
It's the audacity. The audacity of it.
Yeah. Oh, thank goodness. Was it her granddaughter who was the lawyer?
Her daughter.
Daughter.
Angela Woodruff. Who happened to be a solicitor, funnily enough.
There you go, yeah.
So because of all this weirdness, and then maybe also coupled by the fact that they'd just been investigating Shipman anyway, the police exhumed the body, and morphine was found in the victim's system. Shipman was then arrested on September the 7th, 1998. So also, it was the same year when all the stuff with The Undertaker was coming out and that investigation happened. But he'd still managed to kill three extra people, including Kathleen, since he was first investigated. So if they had done it properly, they might have saved a few people.
You'd think that he'd want to, like, stay...
Slow down.
Stay low down and, like, kind of keep his head down. But no, he goes straight back to it and is more ballsier, apparently.
Yeah.
It's just...
Pretty brave.
Very odd.
Very, very odd indeed.
So...
Shipman even went on to claim that Grundy had been an addict, showing them comments he had written in his medical journal. But that was complete bullshit. An examination showed that these were written after her death.
Oh, there you go.
The daughter, Angela Woodruff, said, quote, "The whole thing was unbelievable. The thought of Mum signing the document, leaving everything to her doctor, was inconceivable. The concept of her signing a document which was so badly typed didn't make any sense. Which is bloody fair enough, I reckon, yeah.
I'd
also be very confused. It's almost so outlandish that I'd be like,
yeah,
why is the doctor even trying this if it's not?
It just doesn't make sense. And also, what, you know, badly written spelling mistakes, what's that about as well? You'd think that he would be to the letter.
No, classic doctor's handwriting.
Because I'm sure there's probably... Oh, yeah, where is that? So I'm sure there'll probably be some sort of thing that if a law, like the will isn't, there's spelling mistakes or something like that, it might not be accurate or, I don't know, can you still use it if it's not, like, I don't know how they work, but I'm sure there's probably something in that.
We need to get a lawyer on the show next week,
mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah. Bereavement law or something.
Break it down for us.
Yeah, get someone in. Police managed to verify 14 other cases where Shipman had given lethal doses of diamorphine, falsely registered the patient's deaths, and tampered with their medical history to show that they were dying anyway. Shipman always maintained that he was innocent and was completely uncooperative with police and criminal psychologists that were involved in this case. Every time a police officer would show Shipman a victim's picture during his interview, Shipman would just close his eyes or yawn.
Oh my gosh, dismissive.
Very nonchalant about the whole thing.
Yeah.
As you may have guessed, Shipman was found guilty and given a full life sentence. It was recommended that he never get released from prison, which again, probably fair enough.
Yeah.
Shipman was found dead in his prison cell on January the 13th, 2004. He had committed suicide. He told a probation officer that he was considering doing this so that his wife would receive his pension. If Shipman had lived past 60, she would not have been entitled to this.
Oh my goodness, okay.
With his death, we may never know why Harold Shipman spent so many years killing. I think that it was probably some kind of God complex combined with that experience he had of watching his mother pass away. It's very hard to say why he did what he did. Unless you've got any theories, Georgia.
No, I think I would probably say, yeah, God complex and the trauma he went through with his mother dying so young. But it just, there does seem to be like a lot of questions still there that you want answered. But, yeah. How old was he when he died?
I think it was the day before his 58th birthday. Day before his 58th birthday.
Late 50s.
So. Late 50s, yeah.
Before his 60th.
Maybe it's the day before his 59th. Somewhere in that ballpark. I should have wrote it down.
Okay.
Fuck it. Late 50s, definitely.
It's fine.
A day before some kind of birthday.
Oh my goodness. So his wife, did she get the pension?
Wow. After Shipman committed suicide, his wife, in fact, did receive his pension. This included a £100,000 lump sum paid out to her on his death. She then continued to receive £1,200 a month from that point onwards. And this felt like a kick in the teeth to the family members of Harold Shipman's victims, who had received on average £11,000 in compensation.
Wow, okay, yeah. Oh my gosh, that doesn't seem fair.
No, it doesn't seem fair. I'm actually really surprised that they've let his wife keep that. Because she also believed his innocence right up until the end, supposedly. Although,
did she? I was going to say, did she know anything?
Well, one theory for why he decided to kill himself at that point was because in his final... or one of the final letters that his wife wrote to him, she said that she wanted him to tell him everything, to just tell her everything. So it was the first time she'd alluded to maybe starting to doubt whether or not he was innocent.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. So, yeah, she was asking him to tell the truth. Wow.
Yeah. And I think she did have a funeral for him and everything with her four children. But that must be so weird, because they probably gone from having what felt like a very normal life and
stable
upbringing.
Yeah. Bit of a blip with the opioid addiction, and then...
a little wobble.
You know, a little wobble, but, you know, he's a doctor with his own place to practice, and, yeah, four children and a wife. I think they probably thought they were all set, and then turns out the husband's the angel of death. Terrible.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'd love to know what they're up to now, but we will never know. All in all, Shipman was convicted of killing 15 people, but it's believed he could have killed as many as 250, making him Britain's most prolific killer. And that's it. That's the case for today. That's Harold Shipman.
I would have thought that he would have been charged with more than 15, but I suppose they'd be buried, and then it's a lot of, you know, a lot of money to excavate bodies and go through all of the investigation procedures. And I suppose 15, they probably thought that's enough for him to stay in prison forever. But yeah, wow, 150.
Yeah. That's a lot. A lot of people lost their life when they thought they were just going for a health checkup. Not good.
It's just why? And that's pretty much what it comes down to, of why, like, I find serial killers and, you know, criminals so interesting. It's the why. Like, why did he do this? What did he get out of doing this? It just baffles me.
Makes the mind boggle.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I'm sure everyone has some great theories on why Harold Shipman was the way he is. Do you want to share the social medias so that people can reach out and tell us whatever crazy theory they have for why Harold Shipman was killing people in this way?
Of course, yeah. So you can visit our website and leave case suggestions or share your own true crime or paranormal stories at www.goreandguiltypodcast.com. You can also send us an email at goreandguiltypodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, where we'll be sharing pictures from the case. You can share your theories at goreandguiltypodcast for Instagram and goreandguilty for Twitter. If you like this episode, please leave a review, leave some stars. We greatly appreciate it, and we hope you enjoyed it. And remember, we won't judge if
gore is your guilty pleasure. Thanks
for listening. Bye.